KPBS On Demand is supported by La Jolla Playhouse, presenting the award-winning Jaja's African Hair Braiding. The New York Times called it today's Cheers or Steel Magnolias. This Tony Award-winning comedy celebrates courage, community, and sisterhood. Begins May 17th. Tickets at LaJollaPlayhouse.org.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. The GI Film Festival celebrates its 10th year. I'm Andrew Bowen, in for Jade Hindman, with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and engaged. One of the short films premiering at this year's GI Film Festival follows a Vietnam War veteran haunted by his memories of war.
I relearn a lot about life when I made Doldrums, meaning how do I see trauma through my character's life.
Then a preview of the Park Opera, which combines elements of the opera with the natural sounds of Balboa Park. And your weekend preview. For the past 10 years, the GI Film Festival has highlighted movies for, by, and about active duty service members and veterans. Some of the films will have their San Diego premiere tomorrow, including the narrative short, Doldrums. It follows a Vietnam War veteran haunted by the memories of the soldiers he led and the Viet Cong medic who saved his life. Lê Chau is the director of the film, and she joins us virtually. Lê Chau, welcome to Midday Edition.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. And also with me in studio is Keisha Javis-Jones. She's on the advisory committee for the GI Film Festival. Keisha, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
So, Keisha, I'll start with you. The GI Film Festival is celebrating its 10th year. Congratulations to you. Congratulations to KPBS. You've been involved for the past 5 years. How are you feeling going into this festival this year?
I am very excited for this year. We made a few changes, one of which has been that we're only doing a 3-day event this time. But the exciting part is that it's selling out. And so I'm excited that we're going to be able to share 16 films, which is still a lot of films in 3 short days. But myself being a veteran, I think that the GI Film Festival is just doing such great work, bridging, you know, military stories and then allowing the community to come in and see our authentic experiences.
What are you most excited about this year?
I think this year I'm most excited about Friday. Obviously, that's what we're here to talk about, mainly because I love the DEI aspect of the GI Film Festival and also just being able to share different eras of service, just like this film here where we're talking about Vietnam, and just making sure that we don't forget the history of the military and the contributions of all men and women in service.
Well, Doldrums is going to be premiering tomorrow. Congratulations, Lê Chau. I watched this film this morning. It was really beautiful, incredibly moving. Tell us a bit more about this film and how you came up with this story.
So my family has a history with the Vietnam War. My grandparents served back then along with the U.S. soldiers. But after the fall of Saigon, I never spoken with my grandparents about what happened, and they never talked to me about it. But I got a pieces of the story of their past through going through the pictures and some of the diary, like the written pieces that they still kept in the attic of the house. And growing up, I'm a very imaginative child. So I kind of like creating my own pieces, my own world, like the story through those pieces that I found. And then, interestingly enough, before I wanted to be a filmmaker, I had this dream of being a soldier, maybe because those inspirations and the pieces of history that I've been through with my grandparents through those images and written. And I got a chance to join the U.S. Army National Guard because of COVID put us in like a pause for a year. So I took one gap year during COVID. I joined, I shipped out for basic and I earned my title as a soldier and then came back. I got into UCLA and then continued my film journey. When I got to UCLA, I knew I have to do a thesis film to graduate And I had 10 years of experience working in the film industry as a self-taught with a determined to be a film director. So I'm like, with my history, with the emotional connection with the war, and with myself being in the army, I created Doldrums from those inspirations and those pieces of my grandparents' memories.
What an incredible story. I read a quote from director Martin Scorsese. He once said, "The most personal is the most creative." How did that come up for you while making this film?
I think it's a very accurate statement. I think film, at the end of the day, to make it authentic and to make it original, has to come from your very personal experience. Of course, you have those training skill and education that help you to not like losing yourself when you're making the story, but it got to stem from that personal root. And for me, I relearn a lot about life when I made Doldrums, meaning how do I see trauma through my character's life. I realized that, oh, this is the way that I recognize drama, and this is the way that I would like to deal with it, and this is the outcome that I would hope that I can also incorporate in my life. And from that very personal standpoint, I feel like I can spread out, like the audience, when they watch my film, they can feel that genuine and that emotion that I put in and the lesson that I also learned myself. And I hope to inspire them as well to face with their trauma and to find a way to come into term with it and live a better life. Just like the message at the end of my film, trying to live a better life. But yeah.
Well, let's hear a clip from Doldrums that showcases this idea of facing your trauma and confronting it. This is where both veterans in the film are talking about how they each navigate their memories of the war.
It wasn't your fault. Memories, they're like a violent bore. It's hard to write about.
Violent bore, interesting word choice. How do you deal with the bore?
You just do it a little bit at a time. But somehow, I learned to face the pain, you know, embrace it. But it worked, Captain. I've come in peace with my bore.
I'm not sure if it's possible to be in peace with the bore.
And those were actors Robert Fleet and Alan Parada in the short film Doldrums. Lei Chow, how did you want to approach that scene and depicting the grief and trauma that comes from war?
Thank you for picking that conversation. So I interview one of my neighbor here in LA. He happened to serve in the war as a Marine Corps. And that's actually one of the lines that he said is impossible to deal with the board. He's still living in the past. He's still trying his best every day to be present and to come into term with what happened in the war himself. And then another piece, I interview my NCOIC in my team. She used to deal with cancer and she's called it a board. And she said, there's no way you can push the board out of your life. Trauma or challenges and difficulties. But whenever it's come to your garden, you just let it know it's going to destroy just a part of the garden, and then you will still be able to recover that part of the garden. And once it's gone, you still have your garden. You still have your peace. And I got inspired a lot from those two interviews and remember how my grandpa also deal with his own trauma. He tried to cope with those things, with just daily life. He kind of lived with it. I can see it through his eyes. I can see it through the way he carried himself. He was just taking care of his garden. He was just having a tea in the front yard in the front porch of the house, and he's just like looking far away and trying to kind of come into terms with it internally. So from that, when I wrote Doldrums and when I make that scene, I see my grandpa in it. I see my NCOIC, which is my my kind of like my in charge in the unit. And then I see my neighbor and the two old men talking about how to come into terms with the board. The main character, the captain, said that it's impossible to come into terms with the board. And then his guest, which is his soldier, saying that for somehow just a little bit every day, you can come into peace with it. We as a human being, we can't just be better after one conversation, but 1% every day, knowing you allow the board to come. It can do its destroy and it can do its visit, but after it's gone, you still have a control of your garden. You can still recover. And just knowing that, that you can get 1% better every day, just knowing that is already, I think, a reassurance, because it's the lifelong battle, right? It's the lifelong work.
Mm. Lee Chow, can I just say thank you? I'm a combat veteran. I served 10 years in the Marine Corps, OIF and OEF. And although your film is about Vietnam veterans, it resonated very well to me in a sense of like wartime things occur, loss happens, and it does. It does rear its ugly face and you have to face it every day. But just having a film that really depicts like you have to continue to work through it and these things will happen, I really appreciated that. And it really did. I was in my emotions watching it, and it definitely reminded me of the work that I've done because I got out 10 years mm-hmm. ago now. But then also just the work that I have to continue to do, like you said, for those flowers to keep growing in my garden. And I greatly yes. appreciate you saying that and making this film.
Yeah. Keisha, I imagine you watch a lot of films when you're selecting, you know, what to choose for the GI Film Festival, which has really become an important platform for stories like these. Tell me more about what stood out to you about this particular film.
Yes. So I guess a number of us on the committee, we say, you know, the one thing about the GI Film Festival is that it's authentic. My personal connection, serving those many years after Vietnam War, but still having the same struggles. It's depicted well, and it also encourages other veterans to talk about their stories. And I think as a committee, that's what we want. We want veterans to sit in the room and feel honored and thanked for their service. But we also want those that might not be having those hard conversations to be encouraged to have them, you know, and this short film is just exactly that. Think about your time in service, everything that you've gone through, but also know that even though you might not be in the best place right now, there's avenues to support you and people in the room will be there to support you. That's also the wonderful thing is that we have those that work at organizations in the room, like PsychArmor, like Cohen Clinic, to actually support the veterans that are in the room that might have a hard time watching this. And this might be the one way that they say, after struggling all these years, I do need to get help and I do need to share what I'm going through.
Question for both of you. I'll start with you, Keisha. What are your thoughts on film as a medium to tell stories from the military community specifically and stories that might otherwise go untold or unseen?
Yes, I think this is one way to keep the history alive, make us think about the sacrifices of those who serve, and also, like I said, continue to encourage those who might need support to get support. And for those who don't know much about the military service, to actually look at these films and acknowledge the hardships. Also acknowledge the good times and the camaraderie that we do build while we're in the military. And also understand it's a challenge for us when we get out, right? And I think this is where the community can come in, watch these films, and think about new avenues of approach for resources for our veterans. And also, this is a way of therapy, really, for our veterans. Rather, it's those who are producing the film or those who are watching them. I think that the more education that we have, specifically like in this situation surrounding mental health, the more people that will continue to get help and we'll see our veterans in better places because of it.
Same question to you, Lei Chao. How do you see filmmaking as a tool for telling stories for the military community specifically?
So I think film is a visual tool. A lot of people in the military are visual learning. And for telling a story with visual, I feel like it's create more of like a emotional feeling and connection, because films, you're not just seeing, you can also hear, you have music and you have sound designs. All of those make films very unique. It's like a unique medium to communicate emotions, messages, thoughts, provoking even. Sometimes it just give you a path on your own thought. And at the end of the film, you can cultivate your own emotions and your own feelings through the message that the filmmaker trying to communicate with you. I think that's also one of the reason I committed myself to filmmaking. It's like a very unique medium for me to express my emotion and my feeling and unspoken thoughts or feelings that it just like is so hard to explain by word. Or any other medium. And I really hope that film for me, it will stay even after my time in this world, after I'm gone. So it's like a thing that I contribute to the human history. And hopefully somewhere, somehow in the future, when I'm no longer in this earth, someone watch my film and it can still resonate. They can still find the inspiration, or they can still find the answer, or the path that they've been looking for to ground themselves and to help them a little bit in this world.
Well, Lei Chao, I want to congratulate you not just on the story that you told with this film, but also the cinematography, the sound design, the production design. It was all just truly beautiful. Thank you for making it. Keisha, what are some of the other stories that we can expect to see in tomorrow's movie lineup?
Yes. So there is a number of shorts that you can see made by different directors. And then there's also different eras that are also represented. And I think the best thing about this specific day is that, you know, you don't have to commit to a full featured film, and you're going to get a lot of emotions through all of the shorts.
Well, once again, congratulations to both of you. Lei Chao, congratulations on this film. Keisha, congratulations on 10 years of the GI Film Festival. Doldrums will have its San Diego premiere tomorrow at 7:30 at the Museum of Photographic Arts in Balboa Park. General admission tickets for the screening will be $15, $10 for military members, veterans, and students. I've been speaking with Lei Chao, the director of Doldrums, and Keisha Javis-Jones, an advisory committee member for the GI Film Fest. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Coming up, Project Blank wants you to rethink what opera can be.
So this is an excerpt from the aria. In this case, the diva, the opera singer, is a bee, a little pollinating bumblebee.
Beth Accomando sits down with the composer behind Park Opera. More when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
KPBS On Demand is supported by La Jolla Playhouse, presenting the award-winning JaJa's African Hair Braiding. The New York Times called it today's Cheers or Steel Magnolias. This Tony Award-winning comedy celebrates courage, community, and sisterhood. Begins May 17th. Tickets at LaJollaPlayhouse.org.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Andrew Bowen, in for Jade Hindman. This Saturday, Project Blank will present a single performance of Park Opera, which redefines what opera can be. This large-scale, interdisciplinary arts installation takes different aspects of an operatic work and combines them with the natural environment of Balboa Park. And the event is free and open to the public. KPBS arts reporter Beth Accomando speaks with Project Blank's artistic director, Leslie Latham, and composer Wojtek Blehash about Park Opera and challenging audience expectations.
If this is what you think opera has to sound like, then think again.
So this is an excerpt from the aria, and in this aria, each of the instrumental musical components include some sort of natural world device to them. In this case, the diva, the opera singer, is a bee, a little pollinating bumblebee.
That's Leslie Latham, Artistic Director of Project Blank, and the pollinating bee diva of Park Opera.
The Park Opera is a modular opera installation where you take the component parts of an opera and then scatter them around a public park. And so people can take it at their own pace. They can go through it as fast or slow as they want. Take in as little or as much of it as they want. We'll give them a map when they arrive at our lobby, which will be the Morton Fig Tree. And we've got a path that we've designated for them, but people can take it at their pleasure.
Project Blank is exactly what its name implies.
Yeah, it's a fill in the, blank as in fill in the. Because each concert isn't like the next. It's a pretty varied offering. So we do performance art, we do installation work, sound as installation, which is what Park Opera is. It's really an installation piece that has sound as the element, as the medium. We do contemporary classical music, notated music. We've done retellings of older scores. We did a version of Olivier Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time, but told through the lens of an alien abduction. Because why not? And so, yeah, it's just we do a lot of things. Our practice encompasses so many varied elements, so why not find a way to put it all together? So, yeah, we're always trying to find new ways to bring in what I think are the very super interesting voices from not only from San Diego, but from around the world. And there's some beautiful work being done that explores the relationship between sound and body and the natural world, and particularly by this composer, Wojciech Blechacz. Park Opera is an opera about listening, and it's an opera about, there's no protagonist, there's no storyline. It's about finding, putting an opera in a space that is unobtrusive, where you might just miss it if you're walking past. All of the sounds that the musicians are playing are really, really small, and this gestural language that invites the listener to kind of get closer.
And sometimes you might barely notice the composition. As with this flute solo that uses the instrument in unconventional ways, as composed by Wojciech Blechacz.
He is a friend of ours from UCSD, from a decade and a half ago. And he does these amazing immersive works that I wanted San Diego to get to experience them. It forces the listener to listen in a more embodied way. Forces feels like a harsh word, but it invites the listener to listen in a more embodied way and a less prescriptive way where, there's rules of engagement. You sit in your seat, you act, behave yourself, you're quiet, you applaud when allowed, while the symphony or the opera is being performed in front of you. And in this case, you become part of the opera. Listening, he likes to say that listening is the protagonist in this opera. And all of the people coming and experience it are become a part of it. And so, I don't know, it just felt like such a nice, a beautiful way to celebrate not only this public space that I love, that it is this haven of beauty and history. It's got this amazing ties to San Diego and what it means to San Diegans, but a way to sort of like activate it and get people to experience and engage all of their senses in a different way.
And throughout different spaces in the park.
So the desert cactus garden, the rose garden, the big fountain in front of the science center, the fig tree, which was, I'm super grateful that we were allowed to use the fig tree. It's amazing. And then my favorite spot is the Zorro Butterfly Garden, which is pretty oft visited, not visited very often. It's kind of tucked away a little bit and you kind of have to know it's there. So we're gonna fill it with little bird songs as part of the chorus. It's going to be charming. They're really amazing. And so it's all about finding ways to relate to the natural environment that is hidden in plain sight in the middle of an urban landscape, that you can get lost in a desert grove not realizing there's a freeway right there, right? It's this beautiful, transformative, the park itself is a transformative place. And then the opera then just heightens that. It kind of helps you to disappear in this fantasy land.
Sitting in the desert cactus garden, Blehash explains how he's performed park opera before and will be tailoring it to Balboa Park.
Yeah, so park opera is made of 10 acts, and they can be arranged in different order depending on the space. So far, park opera was done in a park in Warsaw, in a forest in Switzerland, on a small island, in the middle of the lake in Austria, and now it's here. So every time that the sandwalk had to be adapted. But here, this is the San Diego version of park opera, and this sandwalk is especially adapted for Balboa Park. Balboa Park is the libretto for the opera. This is at the same time, the protagonist in a way, you know. So we were walking and listening and trying to compose this sandwalk in the best way, in the best experience for the listener.
And don't be surprised if you come across unicorns by the Rose Garden.
We, in park opera, we invited the unicorns to also to perform with us. And they actually like to eat the rose petals. So they live in the nearby bushes. And when you come to the show, you won't be able to see them because humankind lost the ability to see those mythical creatures. But we will be able to feel the presence of the unicorns. But you have to come and see. No spoilers.
Now, as we can see, this is an open public space, so you'll have people who are coming and following your opera, but what about people who are just here and kind of accidentally happen upon it?
That's, I think, the added bonus, really. It's that not often do we get an opportunity to encounter live music, live installation work. It's often sort of relegated to the kingdom of the opera house or galleries that might feel exclusive or that might not feel like you can relate to the work that's being presented. Sometimes it can feel off-putting, but by kind of putting it in a public place, it makes the consumption of art or the interaction with art or engaging with art very egalitarian. And that it is for everyone. Anybody can get something from this. It's not exclusive. It's for everyone. And so if they happen upon it, that's great. Then they can choose to come on the journey or not. And then they have that little memory to take with them.
So, and where are we now?
We are at the B. Evanson Fountain, the most beautiful source of white noise in the entire park. And at this part of the opera, we will have the binoculars station. So in an opera house, you use your spectacles to see the stage, but in this case, we're going to use them to hear bigger and to amplify the natural world with very analog tools like glass bottles and jars and vases and beakers that kind of work like a conch shell, you know, that it helps to, you explain it. Explain it better than me.
I mean, it's all about
composing your own listening experience, and by filtering a white noise and filtering using different materials next to your ears, you can hear different sounds.
So tell us where we have landed now.
We are in a little grove at the entrance of the desert cactus garden. And this area, this section here, is where we're going to place our grand piano. And in this case, a toy. It's going to be a teeny tiny little baby grand piano, played by a few different pianists throughout the installation. And the sound changes completely,
Yeah.
It's so much less noisy. You hear like the white noise of the traffic on both sides, but you don't really get a sense that it's there other than just the whirring of the engine. You can sort of like disappear in plain sight in these little spots, which are just, they're amazing. It's amazing.
Park opera is also about that pure silence or only natural sounds, they are almost non-existing, that we have to coexist with the man-made sounds, and they are always present in the surroundings. So this is where we are in this moment of our lives, and we always have to deal with this sound pollution, or however we name this sound. Oh, here we go.
A motorcycle.
What would you like to tell people coming to this? Should they bring expectations or leave them all behind?
I think leave them all behind, right? Expect the unexpected to be such a cliche, but bring sunscreen, bring some headphones. There will be some sound walk components that you'll hear better if you have your own like AirPods or noise canceling headphones, ideally. But yeah, come ready to engage in sound and performance in a way that you might never get a chance to see again.
And most importantly, be all ears.
Yeah.
That was Beth Accomando speaking with Project Blank's Leslie Latham and composer Wojtech Blehash. Park Opera takes place this Saturday in Balboa Park from 4 to 7 p.m. Find out more at kpbs.org. Still ahead, arts reporter Julia Dixon Evans shares her picks for the weekend, including an exhibit from a painter whose art is fueled by dreams.
There's this really rich tradition with the intersection of surrealism and dreams. Like, think about Salvador Dali.
Hear more in your weekend preview when KPBS Midday Edition returns.
KPBS On Demand is supported by La Jolla Playhouse, presenting the award-winning JaJa's African Hair Braiding. The New York Times called it today's Cheers or Steel Magnolias. This Tony Award-winning comedy celebrates courage, community, and sisterhood. Begins May 17th. Tickets at LaJollaPlayhouse.org.
Welcome back. This is KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Andrew Bowen, in for Jade Hindman. In our weekend preview, we have visual art, music, and some creative Mother's Day options for you. Joining me with all of the details is KPBS arts reporter Julia Dixon Evans. Welcome, Julia.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you here. So there's a bunch of new art that's opening up at Bread and Salt in Logan Heights. This is part of the Barrio Art Crawl on Saturday. What can we find there?
Yeah, so they're going to be open kind of late, from 5 to 8 on Saturday. They do this every second Saturday. There's a handful of new exhibits opening up. First is Lindsay Bloom's video work. It's called Pneumatic, and she has sound by composer Judith Hemon. It's a staged erotic encounter between a robot and the artist, so lots to unpack there.
Wow.
And it was
that sounds
it
interesting.
It was originally shot on 16mm film and then kind of transposed into this video work that will be on loop in Bread and Salt's video gallery. And then in the main gallery, artist Liz Stringer has sculptures and flatworks. They're going to be on view in her new exhibit called The Tellings. She's based in Long Beach, and some of her sculptures are really, like, monumental, including one that's this, like, 14-foot-tall Gothic column made up of all these, like, individual separate columns. It's about like thinking about the collective. And then the new artist in residence is Philip Brindle Ray, and he's going to have his first open studio of his residency, which will continue through July. And he does a lot of really great text-based art. Some of it is humorous. Some of it is more disruptive with like found objects like signage or print. And that's all from 5 to 8 on Saturday. And then also at the Athenaeum Art Center, which is also in Bread and Salt, there's going to be a Mother's Day pop-up art show that was based on an open call for submissions. And that's on view Friday afternoon and then all day Saturday. But then that's it.
Wow. Well, I'm putting that on my calendar. And true public radio fans will be excited about this one. Writer and humorist David Sedaris is coming to town tonight.
Right. Like many NPR fans, I first discovered David Sedaris when he read some of his stories. It was This American Life, or maybe it was just National Public Radio, but he's also known for his books and these humor essay collections like Me Talk Pretty One Day, Santa Land Diaries, and he's in town tonight to share more stories, including some already published pieces, some of his favorites, and then some works in progress. And he'll also sign books afterwards. And if you've ever been to one of his readings, He's actually notorious for these signings and the things that he writes, but also how much time he spends with each person in line. It's tonight at 7:30 at Balboa Theater, and there's still tickets available.
And on Sunday, of course, it's Mother's Day, and you've got some great options for families if you'd like to do something artistic together for the occasion.
Right. So the Museum of Contemporary Art San Diego, they have a monthly play day. It's this Sunday, and the museum is free all day, and they have some family-friendly programming that's kind of like in the middle of the day. This month, the theme is music on the inside, and they're going to have this art-making activity that's painting a tambourine and making paper instruments with some musicians from Project Blank, and then everybody can join in with their little handmade instruments on a play-along mini concert. And then just like every month, they're going to have a kid-friendly tour of the museum at 11, and then a book nook with some book recommendations and a story time at 1 o'clock.
Some great family fun there. Big news for Broadway fans. The Broadway touring production of Hamilton is back in San Diego. Are people still able to get tickets is the big question.
Yes, I believe so. So it's in town through May 18th. And yes, it is hard to find tickets. But right now there are some like verified resale tickets that are available for most of the shows. But they're also doing a digital lottery. This is every Friday morning at 10 a.m. for $10 tickets. And then the winners are announced the following Thursday. So tomorrow is technically the last week of the lottery. You have to download a special app through the touring production itself, and then you can have a chance to get two tickets. And it's here at the Civic Theater for the next 2 weeks. And this is the room where it happens from the original Broadway cast recording.
I wanna be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. I wanna be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens.
I wanna be in the room where it happens.
Well, that'll be a great show, I'm sure. How about classical music fans? What's in store for them this weekend?
Okay, so the San Diego Symphony, Maestro Rafael Payare and his wife, cellist Elisa Weilerstein, they're performing together this weekend, two concerts. They're going to do Eun-suk Chin's Cello Concerto. This is the fourth movement. So it is such this unique and dynamic piece and very, very technically impressive. And the orchestra will also perform a really lovely piece by composer Anton Bruckner. And the bonus is a pre-concert talk. This year it's by composer Taek-soo Kim, who is professor of music at San Diego State. And that talk will start an hour before each show. He is really wonderful and really knowledgeable about music, so that should be fun. The shows are 7:30 p.m. on Saturday and 2 p.m. on Sunday at Jacobs Music Center downtown.
And finally, there's an exhibit currently on view at Oceanside Museum of Art, and you featured this artist in the latest episode of your podcast, The Finest. Tell us about Mary June.
Yeah, so her exhibit is called In Losing Sleep, I Painted. And for decades, she's painted these like silhouettes of girls inspired by her dreams. She lost her ability to dream when she recently started using a CPAP machine for her sleep apnea. And her dreams had informed her art a lot. Like, she's a surrealist artist. And there's this, I learned this, even though it seems kind of obvious when you think about it, there's this really rich tradition with the intersection of surrealism and dreams. Like, think about Salvador Dali. And we have an excerpt from our episode here where we learn about Mary's relationship to her dream life. Mary's not just obsessed with the aesthetics of her dreams. She's incredibly well-read on the psychology of human dreaming and has done a ton of research, surrounding herself with literature that fed her fascination with dreams.
When I was 18, I came across a Surrealist Manifesto. And that was kind of the key opener for me for feeling good about the thing that I do every night, which is dream. Like, I knew I liked dreams, but I didn't really find the importance of the human experience in the depths of dreams until I picked up that book. And so when I read that, and also being interested in psychology and Freud and Carl Jung, I was able to find the importance of those dreams more so now. And so dreams have always been so inspiring for me to become a surrealist, only because I felt like my day-to-day was answered when I slept and had those kind of revelations. And it's like a storybook, I think, because I'm able to reflect on, oh yeah, why did I dream that? Or how did that make me feel? Or, oh man, I didn't realize I was thinking about that yesterday until I had that dream. Like, so it answered so many things for me, so. Because I always think, if I'm at a sleep state and I'm not fully controlling my dreams and my brain is just firing off, I always think that my dream is like telling me what I need in a kind way. Like, it's like tough love in the form of dreams. And so whether that is I feel bad about something I did and it's taking a hold as this very beautiful, chaotic, dune-like dream where, you know, you're in the sands by yourself and, you know, it's because you have to apologize or something.
With decades of practice, Mary has some pretty wild descriptions of her dreams. In theory, we all have these intricate movies playing in our heads every night. Mary is just really good at paying attention to and remembering them.
Sometimes I feel like I'm a ghost and I'm watching things happen a lot of the times too. Yeah, I just remember that sort of tangible feeling of those dreams. And that's kind of the most important part for me, is the sound, the colors of the dreams, not necessarily the full objects. Because a lot of times mid-dream it alters, like something looks so jagged and then I'll turn around as the dreamer and all of a sudden everything is like rounded, you know? It's just, it keeps changing. And it's just so fun.
So Mary's dreams have been a key window into her subconscious, and her art has been her way of recording and understanding them. It's always been her and the girls, bouncing back and forth between dreams and art like a surreal feedback loop. They've helped her persist through every major challenge in her life.
Wow, that's so cool. I mean, as someone who doesn't remember his dreams very much, I'm just so envious and fascinated. So tell us what these paintings look like.
Yeah, so they're usually silhouettes in profile of the girls' faces, and often like sprouting with botanicals or machinery, and sometimes entire houses growing out of the head. And she also has this really intentional use of color. Each series that she does has a sort of color palette to it. And this one, since it's so connected to air, and the actual CPAP machine is in some of these paintings, so blue plays a really big role, like the blue medical tubing. And then the air and the sky, there's a lot of really vivid blues in these paintings. And at Oceanside Museum of Art, she also has a giant mural covering two entire walls at the exhibit. And you can see that through June 15th.
And ultimately, spoiler alert, she did find her way back to dreaming, didn't she?
Right. And for her, it was this big question of like having to choose between something that's unhealthy but fuels her art. And, you know, for her, that was the bad, restful sleep of sleep apnea. But for other artists, it's things like alcoholism or, you know, other things like that. And then she was choosing between that and her health or using the CPAP machine. But yeah, she told us about some of the ways that she's been able to sort of like hack back into her dreams or find ways to fully remember her dreams. Like as soon as she wakes up, if she has dreamt without like opening her eyes, she starts a voice memo and writes it down. And there's also like bedtime snacking. Healthy fats, apparently, are one way to dream.
Hmm. Well, you can listen to the rest of that episode about Mary June on The Finest, wherever you get your podcasts. I've been speaking with KPBS arts reporter and host of The Finest, Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. This was fun.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by La Jolla Playhouse, presenting the award-winning Jaja's African Hair Braiding. The New York Times called it today's Cheers or Steel Magnolias. This Tony Award-winning comedy celebrates courage, community, and sisterhood. Begins May 17th. Tickets at LaJollaPlayhouse.org.